Hey guys, what's going on? This is Lloyd here with another episode of Act Like a DJ, brought to you from the W Sound Suite in beautiful Bali. Shout out to Damien for hooking us up. Now, if you listen to this podcast, you will gain something. We had Kid Massive in the studio for this episode, and he's got a wealth of experience and has been in the industry for over 20 years. If you've ever struggled with making music, getting demos signed and so on, this podcast will surely bring something to you. He's making music for Naomi Campbell in the future. He's lived in so many countries, I can't even list them. And he makes money from Spotify. He's got his fingers in all kinds of different pies. And he's a really smart dude, really nice fella. If you listen to this show, please take something away from it. I'm sure you will enjoy it. And if you do, subscribe in any way you can, whether it's Facebook, iTunes, YouTube, or whatever. And a big shout out to Greg and James over at Bootstrap Cold Brew Coffee. If you're in Bali and you're into your cold coffee, make sure to check them out. It is the best cold brew coffee in town and it fuels me every day of my life. I am an absolute coffee whore. And lastly, to Kick Denim. They hook me up with all my clothes when I'm DJing. They're provided by Kick Denim. Search for them on Instagram at Kick Denim.
Hi, this is Marco Liz.
Hey, we are Denzel Park.
Hi, this is Martin Knight from Torn Records, and you're checking out Act Like a DJ with LPR.
Hey guys, this is Stonebridge, and you're listening to Act Like a DJ with my boy LPR.
Hey, with Mr. Kid Massive. How you doing, mate?
Good, mate. How you doing?
I'm very, very well. We are in beautiful Bali. This is where we tend to do these things. At the W Sound Suite, shout out to Damien. He's hooked us up this morning, Friday morning. And you're in town on a little bit of business. Tell us what you're doing in Bali.
So I'm here for a part of my Asia tour. So I'm playing tonight at Mira for the first time. Never been here before. And then I'm off to Vietnam. I've got a load of shows in Vietnam as well over the next couple of weeks.
And what have you been up to before Bali?
Studio lockdown. I'm working on a fashion show at the moment. I'm making the music for Naomi Campbell's Fashion for Relief in Cannes. Nice. End of May, so I've just been locked down just doing that.
And has that been an ongoing project for quite
a
while?
Yeah, it's been going for a while, and obviously I've got the label as well. I've got had some other tour dates. I've been into India, I was in Japan as well, so quite a few things going on. I try not to tour as much because I actually, the whole travelling part really knocks me out, so I'm very selective about where I go.
Well, I guess a Bali flight as well. What was it, 24 hours?
24 hours, three stopovers. Because obviously I have to connect all the different flights and I have to leave tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And
all the good stuff.
All the fun stuff. But yeah. You know what? The sun's shining.
Are you looking well, though? You don't look like you've had the 24-hour flight the day before.
Cheers, mate. I had a massage last night.
Oh,
like,
there you
when
go.
I got here. Like a proper massage.
Yeah.
Like a good one.
And insert your own jokes there.
Yeah,
Bali
exactly.
Massages.
And nice sleep, great bed. I had an Indonesian traditional breakfast this morning when I got up.
Happy days.
I'm here, and then afterwards I'm going back to the pool. I'm just going to lie and get all red.
And just chill the fuck out.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about. That's awesome. What Bali's about.
That's exactly
so
it.
So what goes into producing a show for Naomi Campbell? How does it come about, and what do you have to do to get that into fruition?
Well, I am a friend of mine called Tony, who's friends with a whole load of these people in London. And we have a company called Love and Light, which is a production company. And this is going to be our first venture into fashion. So it's bespoke music for the fashion industry. So it's not just the DJ randomly playing selected music, but it's actually me going in and producing tailor-made music for the show. Because then licensing rights, they can use it online, you can use it on YouTube,
sure.
Et cetera, et cetera. So it kind of makes sense for them to have it rather than go and license stuff. So.
And is it... What style of music are you making for the show in particular?
So this one coming up is house. It's 124 BPM.
Oh, cool.
It starts off sort of quite emotional, meditative, quite long soundscapes, and then it builds into like sort of Afro drums at the end, and then towards the end I sort of mix in like a Candy Staten track.
Nice.
So it's kind of like a long continuous mix with elements throughout.
How long will it be?
20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So it's the longest track I've ever made.
That's cool. And I mean, in terms of your background then, so where did it all start for you? Where are you from? Where do you live? Where have you been? Because we were talking on the way here and Just in the 5 minutes on the from the lobby to the studio, you've let it slip.
I've done a lot.
You've been around a little.
I've done
bit.
A lot. So I've been in the industry for about 20 years. I'm Danish.
It doesn't look like he's been in the industry for 20 years.
Because I don't smoke.
Let me tell you.
Kids, don't smoke, don't drink, don't do drugs. Keep it clean, healthy living. Go to the gym as much as possible. So you know, 20 years in the industry. I'm from Denmark originally. I've lived in Denmark, lived in Holland, I've lived in Paris, I've lived in Amsterdam, I've lived in London.
The who's who, basically.
Yeah. So
where's your favourite place in all those places?
They're all different. They're all different, mate. It's like Sydney's amazing for the weather and for the food.
But then Sydney, there's another one, by the way.
Yeah, brilliant there. And it's... But then, you know, Paris has got something else and then Amsterdam's got something else. There's not one particular place that has everything. So it's kind of like, you know, go to London, you haven't got the weather, but you've got the club scene. Sure. You know, you go to Paris, you might not have the club scene, but then you've got the history. Mm-hmm. Go to Sydney, you've got the food and the outdoor culture. So every country is different. So it's kind of what you're looking for, really, to be honest.
What brings you to move? I'm not going to say at the drop of a hat, but, it, you know, you've been around to tons of places around Europe, the States, Australia. What brings you to move to a different city? Like so often, what is it music? Is it your career, or just a want to move around? And
it's a gut instinct about what I feel like doing. So I am.
It's a great way to look at it.
You know, if something feels right, then it is right. And if I feel that I need to move on, like when I was in Paris, I was there for 3 years, and then I just knew that I had to go to London. I had to go back to London. We were in Sydney for 2 years, and then we just instinctively knew, like, okay, this is great, but we're not quite done yet with London. So I moved back again, and you know, every time that you follow your intuition, your gut, that's when magic happens. Because then you just kind of, it's like jumping to a river. You've got two choices. You can either swim upstream, which is going to be really difficult, and you're going to drown at some point because you're going to run out of energy, or you simply just kick back, relax, and let the current take you and flow you down the river. And that's kind of what I do. So I get an instinct for, all right, this is what feels right, and then I'm just gonna do it. As long as it obviously doesn't hurt anyone, as long as there's no consequence, negative consequence towards me, my family, or anyone like that, I've done that my entire life. So
I'm welling up here. That's going to be one of the little short edits for this show, I'm sure. I'm going to make a little video clip out of that.
There you go.
So have you always moved and had a job waiting for you, or is it kind of not been like that? You've just gone because of what you've just been describing?
Yeah,
And just gone with the flow?
Yeah, that's it. Literally, before I was... full-time DJ, producer. I was a hairdresser.
Nice.
10 years, like a bit cliche, I know. Shout out to Dee Ramirez for that
Yeah,
one.
He's been on this. He's
all right, well, there you go. Yeah. Classic hairdressing. There's a few others as well. I can't remember the name.
But your hair's not quite the same as Dean's.
No.
Though. I mean, has that
no.
ever crossed your mind? Have you ever gone for the platinum look?
Well, no, Dean's a bit more metro than me.
Yeah.
I'm a bit more masculine.
That's fair to say.
Sorry, Dean, but mate, sorry. Anyway, I've totally forgot the question. What's the question?
It was just, you were talking about being a hairdresser before you were a full-time
right.
DJ.
Yeah. So whenever I move, I literally, how should I put it? I look at everything. I look at the pros and cons, and I look at what's the market like. I look at, are there any agencies out there? What kind of clubs are there? Because I make house music. I make energetic, uplifting house music. So for me to move to LA when EDM was massive made no sense for me. I had to be where my sound was. And, you know, it's very much about doing your market research, finding out who is in that area that already has connected to your music. And I'd say market research. And, you know, and if I like France, so I thought, all right, let's give France a shot. You know, I love Australia, let's give Australia a shot. You know, Amsterdam's the same.
But so, no favourites out of all them? Just
no.
All different in their own
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. All different.
So have you always been into music from an early age? Or how did the obsession and the transition from whatever you were doing into hairdressing, into music, how did it come about?
Well, my dad was heavily into country and western. So I grew up with music in the house all the time. He listens to the same records over and over, and he still does to this day. It's so boring. Anyway... And I've always loved music. I used to record, despite being Danish, I grew up in the UK, and I used to record on my little Fisher Price radio. I used to record all the radio shows like Mars, Pump Up the Volume, and all that kind of stuff, and make my own little mix edits of all these songs. And that's kind of what got me into it. And then I started out, funnily enough, back in the early '90s, playing jungle. good old school classic jungle under the name DJ Massive. And I did that for a couple of years. And I still love drum and bass to this day. It's one of my, it's my favorite genre. And my favorite DJ of all time is DJ Kid Capri from New York. And I'm a massive hip hop head as well. I love old school stuff. And I kind of, I was always into house. I've always liked house. And I thought, I really want to create a name that really represents who I am. So I took basically the DJ Massive. I took Kid Capri, my hero at the time. I smashed him up and came up with Kid Massive. And what was funny was one of the, I think it was the second single I ever put out, 2003 or four, one of the two, I can't remember. It was, I think it was called Bring It On. No, I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, regardless of what it was called. And I remember sending it to Illegal Beats record label. And the guy got back to me and he said, a guy called Trevor, and he got back to me and said, yeah, I love the record, great record, but we can't put it out as Kid Massive. And I said, oh, why not? And he said, well, you do know that this is Kid Cream's label. I was like, oh, right. No, I didn't know it was Kid Cream's label. So they made me change my name to Contract Killers, which was a bit of a shame.
Well, they suggested it.
They suggested it. They're like, sorry, mate, we can't put it out as Kid Massive because it's Kid Cream's label. And for those of you out there that don't know, Kid Cream around that time, 2004, 2005, 2006, he was the Don. He was like the biggest house DJ on the planet, pretty much. So obviously, I had to change my name for that one-off single. Then I thought, you know what? Can I swear on the radio?
You can. It's not a radio, so you can do whatever you want.
On the podcast, right? And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna call myself Kid Massive. And there's so many people that thought, what, are you Kid Cream? I'm like, no, I'm not. I had my name before Kid Cream even blew up. You know, this, I can show you my old demos. I can show you all this stuff. I was DJing under that name. And I'm like, I'm not going to change it. It's just not going to happen. And then I met him. And he was like, and he's Italian. And he's like, hey, so you're Kid Massive. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I love your music.
You're
like,
in the wrong job. You should be doing impressions, mate.
And I was like, sweet. And ever since then, we've kind of been mates and, you know, no animosity or anything like that. And, you know, he hasn't retired, but he's kind of pulled himself out of the limelight and has done for the last couple of years. So it's kind of left me being like the ultimate kid.
Well, there you go. So there's the origin for Kid Massive. So you described your sound before, just so that people can associate to you, because you obviously got a big gig tonight coming up at Mirror. What can they expect from your set tonight? Have you always played the same style? I know you've been influenced by Jungle. Drum and bass, etc. Yeah. Is it kind of progressed through, or have you always just been into house because you've been a house producer?
I'm a professional, so I look at the market, and I am also a music lover. I love everything. Punk, drum and bass, jazz, fusion, everything. I love it. If it's good, it's good. It doesn't matter who made it. And what happens with the dance music scene is genres come through all the time. And like, for example, when EDM came out, I really liked the initial first wave of it. I thought it was really creative, it was really new, and I got really inspired by that. So I took that and I ran with it as far as I could, that I felt comfortable. And then it got to the point where it just got stupid, it just got silly. And I just said, right, I can't do this anymore. So then I pulled myself out of EDM and went back to making my records that I wanted to make. But it's very much a sense of, you know, looking at what's going on around you and being in, you know, so if there's a specific type of bassline that is, you can see is going to be the next sound, and if it fits with your expression, then don't be afraid to use it, because that's called adapting. What I don't do is I don't follow genre for genre trends. You know, trap right now is huge. I don't make trap. I don't play trap. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. You know, big EDM stuff, not for me. Melbourne Bounce, when that came out, not for me.
Was you in Australia when the big wave of Melbourne Bounce? Yeah. It crossed over into Bali. It stayed here for, I don't know, 6 months.
Right.
Went, but now everyone's like still trying to get away with it in the big EDM clubs.
Yeah,
and
it's don't get me wrong, you know, there are a few acts out there. You know, there's Scandal from Australia that I love, their early stuff. But it wasn't Melbourne Bounce. It just had an element of what became Melbourne Bounce. I used to play that. But then when it got Melbourne Bounce, I was just like, nah, I'm not 12. I can't play this. This is not me. And my production as well. So that's why if you listen to my first record of 2003 and you listen to my records 2017, you can still hear the one characteristic that goes all the way through is energy. has to be uplifting. There has to be a shuffle. It has to be funky.
That's kind of your blueprint.
That's my blueprint.
You bring it to the table.
Yeah, it's, you know, some guys are, you know, long melodic tracks. Other guys are short, super edits. Other guys are really commercial, noisy, little squeaks and bubbles. And that's not me. Mm-hmm. I like vocals. I love pianos. I love what creates the essence of house music. Then I then change and adapt the sounds around it. And that works really well for me. And that's given me a career that's lasted over 20 years.
Well, yeah, you're right. And I guess it goes a long way as well, because if you're influenced by all these different styles, you can always bring certain different elements to the table. You might not play Melbourne Bounce. You know, you might not be currently into EDM, but like you just said, if you're still interested in listening to different styles, you might hear something in an EDM track or a Melbourne Bounce track and go, "Ooh, I can put my stamp on that." I don't mean in a remix thing.
Absolutely.
I just mean just taking the little snippet. It's just, I guess it's about being as broad and open-minded as possible without necessarily going with the sheep, as you know, as it were, and going towards
and that's
that
exactly
style.
It. And I remember, like when I had like one of the earliest tracks on Revealed before it got really huge, and we went really EDM. And I remember listening to Danik's stuff before he really blew up, and I requested him on the remix for the single, and I remember just listening to his production, going, he just has that tribal underlay on the beat underneath, and it just works. And then that's kind of what got me inspired to like add those tom-toms underneath, that kind of shuffle. And then that's kind of progressed into literally what's happening right now is, you know, a lot of the stuff that I do, you know, I've done a few tribal mixes, like proper tribal remixes. And a lot of those were triggered by listening to the early EDM stuff, because they had the tom-toms underneath. That reminded me of the old tribal stuff from, like, you know, the late 90s, Danny Tenaglia and Peter Ruhauer and things like that. So it all connects back. And if you sit and you're like me, a nerd, and you sit and listen and analyze to music, you can always pick out, like you just said, there's a sound there, there's an organ there, there's a specific side chain element there. Go, I really like that. In its current form, it won't work for me. However, if I tweak it, then it will work for me. And I think that's what music is. It's a development, and you create something of your own given what you've got. So, because nothing's new. Mm-hmm. Everything is reinvented from something else. Everything is borrowed from something else. You know, I'm not trying to recreate the wheel. I'm trying to recreate my wheel, what I want to listen to.
Never stand still.
You know, like, I've got probably 20 tracks on my hard drive at home, tracks that are done, and they're all different genres, in the sense that, you know, one might be for Great Stuff, another one might be for Flamingo, and one might be for my own label. But they all work. And if you hear me play a DJ set, they'll be like, yeah, I can see how they would fit. But if you listen to them individually back to back, you go, oh, one's a bit deeper, one's a bit this, one's a bit that. But my DJ set is a journey. I know that's a bit cliche. But it is I do take it up, I do take it down. I do, you know, when I say take it up and take it down, I mean in terms of punch. The energy is the same. You know, I don't go and play like a techno track after I've played a big, massive build-up track. I don't do that. What I mean by that is, like, I would play a track with less vocals, for example. That's just a good groove. Then after that, I'd play like a big, heavy tribal track with lots of percussion that adds the extra groove to it. And then the third track might be a big commercial vocal track. Mm-hmm. So by mixing all three together, you create something brand new instead of playing back-to-back the same records. And that's why the music I release can be quite different. But when you hear me DJ, you'll see, oh, right, it makes sense. Because I make music for me.
So that's the cue to call to get everyone down to Mirror tonight, then?
That's
so
it.
So you can see what
that's
we're talking
it.
About.
You know, and for all you aspiring DJs and producers out there, do it for you. Don't do it for other people. Because once you start tailoring yourself to what other people want and what they expect, you're done. That's it. You're over. You might be flash in the pan for a year or two, but unless you're really, really in the right place at the right time, the likelihood is you're not going to make it. Create your own sound, create your own niche, be individual. Don't take nonsense from anyone. If it doesn't work for you, then it doesn't work for you. Don't bend over backwards.
I think you're absolutely right, because, I mean, just as an example of the plethora of good DJs and producers that are out there, which you'd never even know about. We were in here a few days ago, and one of the guest DJs for the W was listening to some demos, and we're on the couch just listening to them, all of a sudden, you know, your foot starts going, your head starts nodding. You check out the artist, it's someone who you've never heard of. And then you go down that rabbit hole then, you start looking at what they're producing and listening to their stuff. And there's just so many good people out there. So if you wanna follow the trend, you're gonna get lost in that sea of good young DJs and producers that are currently on the scene. But if you wanna wanna put your own stamp on things, then that seems to be the advice that everyone who comes on this podcast, they have that central theme.
Yeah.
It's don't follow what everyone's doing. Do what you think that you're good at and what you enjoy, and it will shine through. And
absolutely, for someone who's in the industry for 20 plus years, I also run a label, and you know the amount of times I get demos from people going, "What are you looking for?" I'm like, "We'll just go on the SoundCloud. You'll get an idea of what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a specific genre. I'm looking for individuality. I'm looking for something that sounds a bit different to what everyone else is doing. What can you bring? Who are you? Where do you live? Where do you come from? Oh, you're from Bali. Okay. So that means you'll have a Southeastern Asia flavor. All right, we'll bring that to the table. Let me hear that. Okay, you're from India. All right, we'll bring me some tablas. Bring me something that represents you as an artist. You're from Russia. Okay, well then give me your vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a clone of Kreider, because we already have a Kreider. I don't need a clone of Tom Starr, because Tom Starr is already huge. Give me you.
Mm-hmm.
Create uniqueness. Don't be afraid of delving into the classics. You know, don't be afraid of being inspired by old disco and funk and country and rock and punk and anything that you feel is going to make your record stand out. Because don't forget, you know, compared to a lot of the big guys out there, I don't get a lot, but I probably get about 300 to 400 promos a week, and the majority, it's not great. Not in the sense it's not well produced, it just doesn't stand out.
Yeah.
It's either really boring, dull tech house. Well, I mean boring and dull, I mean like where nothing happens, or techno, which goes nowhere, or trap. And I'm like, okay, well, why are you creating something that everyone else is creating? Granted, if you like it, fair enough. But then think outside the box. How are you going to make yourself stand out? Because at the moment, everyone is just using exactly the same presets, the same loops, the same construction kits. And the reason that I know this is because I make those construction kits that the people use. So I do a lot of work with Loopmasters.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of the construction kits and stuff like that. So I know exactly what's out there because I get everything sent. So my sample bank is huge.
You're hearing your own loops in people that are sending things to
you. I've had people send me demos with my own loops in them. And I'm like, you've literally just ripped off my entire track.
You haven't changed a thing. You've
not
just
done
dropped it in and there we go.
And I don't have an issue using my samples because that's the whole point of me creating them. But then like, use them creatively. Give me something different.
Mm-hmm.
But because everyone, you know, you can make your phone, you can make music on your phone now, you know? So you really don't need to push yourself. That's what you think. But the reality is very, very different.
Sure, sure.
Very different.
So you're DJ, producer, label owner, plus, you know,
everything
X, Y,
else.
And Z, everything else. Do you remember a time which you would consider to be the break that you really hoped for in this industry? Because a lot of people, you know, they might be releasing records, but they still may not have found what they're actually trying to achieve. They might not have had a tour outside of their city or outside of their country and stuff. Can you remember a time or a record or a, you know, a gig that you did and you sat back and thought, this is going places now, this is changing for the better? Can you remember that?
Yeah, I can actually. I would say it was 2007, 2008.
And how long had you been producing for by this point?
About 5 years. I've done a lot of different projects. So I started out making really soulful house in the early 2000s under a project called Rhythm Slaves with a friend of mine. You know, we've released on Swing City, we've released Easy Street, released on Blaze's label. So, you know, we've done a lot, remix Rosie Gaines, Closer Than Close, etc. Things like that. So
mm-hmm.
I've been in the industry for a long time, you know, worked with Knee Deep and people like that. But then to start branching out with my own career took a bit longer because I was very specific in what I wanted to create, and that would take a bit longer. So my first record as Kid Massive was in 2003 on Slip and Slide. That opened up a whole lot of doors for me. And I just I just continued to make good house music. I was really inspired by the funky house at the time, you know, like Warren Clark, Kid Cream, Junior Jack, you know, there's loads of really good artists out there, Born to Funk, etc. And I really love that stuff, and I still do today. And then I think what the breaking point was a combination of two things. One was I did a track called Get Busy, which was in 2007, I think. And there was a Soul Avengers remix of that, which went number one on Beatport at the time, and it blew up. And that was when literally the touring started. That combined with, I was working with Sanchez at the time, I was doing a lot of stuff with Stealth, and I was DJing a lot for the Release Yourself Nights as well. So those two things combined gave me that bit of profile that I was looking for, because the promoters didn't really have a reason to book me. They knew my music, they played my music, but there was nothing for them to say, this is the guy that does so-and-so, X and Y. Get Busy came along, this is number one. Beatport, he works with Sanchez, bam, that's what happened.
Now the floodgates
are then opening. It opened. And it went really, really well for probably up until 2012, touring a lot, like everything was going really, really well. And then EDM came along. Everything that I knew in terms of house music changed. And I was literally stuck. I was like, what do I do? And all I was doing was DJing. I didn't have any other skills. That was my only source of income, was touring at that time. Since then, it's changed a lot. I have lots of different avenues now, because now I'm a professional and grown up.
Yeah. It's got to happen one day.
It's got to happen someday. And what happened was, I almost quit. I almost said, I can't do this anymore. Fuck this. This is not working for me. So what I did was, I took a long, hard look at where I was at. I found out that, personally, I was really unhappy. Not with my music career, just with my own life. Everything was shit. I hated everything and everyone. And my mindset was really, really, really negative. I wouldn't say it was depression, but it was borderline. And I knew that I had to change that, because music is an extension of your personality, and my personality just wasn't in a good place.
Dark.
Yeah, exactly. So my wife and I, we decided to go to Australia and just to reset. And I went over there, and it was good because it removed me from everything and everyone, and it took me out to the sunshine. And I really, as cliche as it is, I found myself. I stepped back and I thought, right, who am I? What do I love? What is it that I'm all about? And that's when I realized that I need to stop worrying about what other people want and start practicing what I've been preaching. And then that's where I said, you know what, fuck this EDM stuff. I can't do it. I literally for 2 years, 3 years, had no gigs. I had no money, nothing. Everything just stopped. And slowly people can see that, right, you know, the last 3-4 years, I've just been making my records. And now the scene, I haven't changed. Yeah. The scene
has always been that constant.
Always.
And EDM's come and go in a little bit. And then,
and it's brought me back to where I, you know, to the point where I'm like, oh, okay, Kid Massive. Yeah. My music hasn't changed in the last 4 years. It's still fucking good. But now the clubs are ready to book what I want, what I play. Rather than, I could go and tonight and I could play back-to-back EDM commercial set. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And that's not why I'm booked. They want me to play house. My house.
I get it.
That's what I'm doing. That's a really, really good position to be in. That combined with the fact that I'm loving life. I'm 42. You know, this is technically a midlife crisis right now. I'm halfway through my life. I'm over it. I'm done. I've overcome my midlife crisis. There is no crisis. Now it's just midlife, and now I'm just smashing it. And
midlife? Or...
I know. How old are you?
I'm 30.
There you go.
But you look the same age as me, though. So,
It's about, you know, doing who you are, doing what you do, being who you are, and just following your own trends, following your own passions. And, you know, and if you do hit a point where life just gets really hard, acknowledge it. Don't put it under the carpet. Don't put a lid on it. Because once you start forcing yourself to not deal with issues, then that's when shit gets really hard. And that's when you potentially might lose what you've got in terms of passion, love, your career, family, your friends, even your life. If it gets that heavy, it's not worth it. So think about it. You know, I'm just saying, this is just words of advice from myself that I've gone through. And right now...
You've been through that.
I've seen it. I've you know, and I'm being very honest, very candid. So... And now I'm in Bali, the sun shines.
Well, you're here for about 24 hours, aren't you?
There you go.
What happens after Bali? After Mira, you get on a plane, and where do you go?
Up to Hanoi, doing a show in Camilla Lounge. up there, and then I'm there till Tuesday, and then I fly down to Ho Chi Minh, and I'm doing a show at a place called Upper, which is like a rooftop club, and then I'm going out to the coast on the Saturday. Then I'm doing a show there, and then I leave Monday morning, back to the studio, finish off the fashion show stuff in Cannes.
That's going to be London?
No, that's in Cannes.
Oh, okay.
And then I fly out to Cannes 17th of May to the 21st or 22nd, do the show. And this is cool. So I'm DJing at Naomi Campbell's private birthday party on a yacht on the Sunday after the
show.
Nice. Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Can't be bad, can it?
And then back to London. I've got a few things I need to finish off in the studio. Then I go to Japan for a week. I've got Osaka and Sapporo. Back in London, I've got a show in London. Then I go back to Japan again, start of July. I've got a party with Avex, a big label in Japan, Tokyo, on the 2nd of July, I think it is.
Good memory.
And then back to London. And again, then it's just studio work, because again, I've got a shitload of stuff that I need to finish off. So
half an hour ago, you said that you don't tour as much.
No.
And now you've just listed off 85 places that you're going. We're in just about getting into May now. Have you been busy since the turn of the year? I mean, when you say not touring much, I can only imagine what it was like before then.
Before it was horrible. I didn't enjoy it. It was literally every weekend for like 3-4 years in a row. It wasn't fun.
Just no rest. No, just track on.
Yeah. Because what happened, I'm going to get very personal here. So about 4-5 years ago, I got meningitis and I got really sick and I went to the hospital. And what happened is my immune system got shot, completely destroyed. So now I get cold really quickly, I get really tired really quickly, and I need to be really careful. And he says, turning off the AC. No, it's fine with the AC. And what happens off the back of that is, you know, if I do prolonged traveling, I just crash out. I'm crash and burn, and I can't cope. So I know myself well enough to go, right, I can travel extensively for 2 weeks, once a month, maybe every 2 months, and then that's it. Then I need a break. I need to go home, sleep in my own bed, go to the gym, have my routine. And then also when you go out and travel, you enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Because then it's just like, oh, I've got to go to Poland and I've only been home for 2 days.
Is there any part of the world you haven't been and DJ'd at?
Well, yeah, this part of the world. First time in Indonesia. I've done South America. I've pretty much done most of the world. I haven't done Central Africa. I've done Southern Africa, Northern Africa. Done Cape Town, Johannesburg. Done Algeria, Morocco. I've done all of the Northern Egypt, stuff like that. I haven't done Central Africa. I'd like to do Burma, just because.
Burma promoters? Is your cue?
Get in touch. My stepdad's Burmese.
Okay.
So I grew up with Asian culture, and I just really want to go.
Yeah. So that could be the next one after July then, once you've got all this...
Fingers crossed.
This madness out the way.
And what's funny is I do my own bookings.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of background research and there doesn't seem to be a management involved. So have you always done it that way?
I've had a couple of booking agencies. Some worked out, some didn't.
What are the pros and cons in your opinion of doing it on yourself?
The pros are you get to choose where you go, when you go, what flights you take, and you get to choose your fee. The cons are you have to find the shows yourself, or you have to start speaking to people, or you have to start replying to the emails you get. But ultimately, I think if you've got a product that is interesting enough, then people will get in touch. You know, or people will, you know. What happens in the world is if you put out love, you get it back. You know, if you're a positive person, the same thing happens to you back in return. So, you know, I have to give a shout out to Matt Caselli.
He was here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. And it's Matt Caselli's contact that helped me get here. I put him in contact with my Japanese agent. So it's kind of like, you help me, I help you. There's someone, you know, if someone contacts me and goes, listen, I'm in London, I'm looking for a show. And I go, okay, great, speak to this person. Because I think what's happening is a lot of the booking agencies now, they're getting lazy and fat. They can't be bothered. They don't need to. And what happens is you've got an artist who is about to blow up or who is blowing up. And the booking agency is simply just relying on traction off one record. But everyone knows a record only lasts for a month or two, and then it's dead and you have to move on to the next. And a lot of agencies don't know how to continue the hype, the push. So I've always been very much about self-empowerment, do it yourself. Be your own boss, create your own niche. Because the contacts that you have today, you'll have in 10 years. You know, like there's people in Singapore that I played for 10 years that still do events out there that I'm still in contact with. So if I ever want to go to Singapore, I just hit them up and go, right, I'm going to be in this part of Asia. Can we sort something out? Yeah, sure. Great. Then I can tailor everything myself.
It sounds like you're about to get 300 emails asking for you to be someone's manager.
And what's funny is I do mentoring at a music college in London called ELAM, so the East London Academy of Music. And it's funded by Universal, and it was set up by Chasing Status. And I'm one of the mentors at the college out there. I teach out there as well. And I'm also working...
That's a career job number 57 that we've
been
through.
Yeah, it's one of those. That's a passion. That's something that I love to do. And I'm also developing it's called a line. It's a self-development business that allows people to understand why they do what they do. So, for example, you know, the students I work with, they're 16 to 19-year-olds, and they're all aspiring singers and rappers and music production engineers. And like, what I ask them, which no one else asks them, is, well, why do you want to be what you want to be? And a lot of them will say, well, you know, I want the money, I want the fame. And I'm like, yes, that's great. But what's the underlying reason why you want to be a successful singer? Where does it come from? What's the passion? What's the drive behind it? Because once you understand where it comes from, that's when you really connect to who you are. And that's when nothing will stop you achieving it. It's like saying, so I don't smoke. If I said to you, and you're a smoker, and I said to you, don't smoke, you're going to turn around and go, well, fuck you. Well, the reason you're saying that to me is because you need to make the decision for yourself. I can't tell you what to do. What I can simply do is say, right, well, this is the information. This is what's available. This is what is going to happen. Do with it what you will. And what happens is, by giving people choice and letting them understand why they do what they do, that's when they can make the decision to stop or to move on or to move in different directions. And also, it's a great way of people to, how should I put it, when obstacles appear. So, for example, in my case, what happened was I got dropped by my agency. And I was at a point where I was thinking, okay, well, what's going to happen? And I thought, you know what? It doesn't matter whether I get dropped or not, because I can do it myself. Because I knew that I was making music for me. Just because an agency had dropped me didn't mean that I was not worthy. It just meant that I wasn't the fit for what they wanted. And I was like, cool, that's fine. I'll do it myself. Whereas a lot of the young adults coming up, if they get any type obstacle or obstruction in the way, they crack and crumble because they don't know how to deal with it. But if you understand why you're doing it in the first place, money, fame, drugs, women, champagne, private jets, that's just a bonus. That's just fun.
Naomi Campbell parties on yachts.
Exactly. You know, and I'm stone cold sober. And it's about understanding why you do what you do. And that is something else that I'm really, really passionate about as well within the industry, is to get people to find their drive, find their passion. Because then that's when you can turn a flash in the pan into a career. So for all you aspiring artists out there, don't be afraid to think about who you are and why you do what you do. But you need to ask yourself, why are you doing it in the first place? If you're doing it for the money, great, nothing wrong with that. But then you have to be comfortable with, at some point, you might not have any money. Fine. Because if you're not comfortable with it, it's going to be a rude shock when it happens.
Yeah, and it's going to happen.
And it will happen. So.
So on the subject of advice for aspiring DJs and producers, you have a label.
Yes.
Are you currently accepting demos?
I am.
And if so, how do these young and aspiring so-and-sos, how do they reach out to you? And, you know, I'm not going to say is there a specific genre, because we've been through that, and hopefully they've took a lot from what you've said so far. But if they want to send a demo to Kid Massive, what do they do?
Go. All right. Do what every other person on the planet does. Go online, type in Kid Massive, and then you'll see there's an email. Just email me. It's really, really, really easy.
Your inbox is about to blow up, my friend.
So it's info at Kid Massive. If you want to hit me up personally, it's demo at getdownrecordings.com. You know, what I found with a lot of artists and a lot of DJs is they don't connect to their fans directly. It's through management. I understand why, because they're busy. But I feel personally that for me, it works better if I can say, right, if you want to get in contact, there you go. My email is on pretty much every social platform I have.
That's what I did.
Yeah, that's what you did. Exactly that. And I did that so people could get in contact with me. you know, people send me a Facebook message, I do normally reply. It might take me a while, but I do reply.
Well, and it gets to you, it doesn't go to
somebody
else. It gets
to me. And that's the whole point, because, you know, I'm not a management. I'm not a booking agent. I'm not a PR agent. I'm Benjamin. It's me. This is what I do. You know, and if you meet me, well, you'll see that I'm a pretty nice guy. You can talk to me about anything. You know, one of the things that I tell my students that I work with, if you see someone that you respect or that you recognize can help you get you where you want to go, speak to them. Have a CD, have a vinyl, have a tape, have a card, do anything. Go up to them, shake their hands. Because you could be the world's greatest something or other, but unless you tell people about it, no one will ever know. I remember your music. You know, I was playing one of your records for yonks.
Talk more about that.
Yeah, what was it called?
The first one was Watching You.
That's the one.
That was it. Because that was, you must have been in Australia at that time.
I think,
right?
I probably was.
Because
yeah.
That was, I was on Neon in the end of 2012.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was big. That was big.
And
for me.
We got a couple of big remixes out of, well, I say we, Neon got a couple of big remixes. We had Olaf Bosowski from the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And Marco Lees.
Yeah.
That there started my relationship with Marco. We've been friends ever since.
A lovely guy, Marco.
One of the best.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
one of the best. He's played in Bali a few times.
Ah,
but
cool.
Hopefully he'll get back here next. But no, I appreciate that. If you've found any of my records interesting.
I have, yeah, yeah. And I've, like I said, that one, I know that I played that for a long time. Because it was just one of those records that worked for me, in sound-wise.
Well, you know, when we were talking a while ago, when you were talking about the Funky House era,
yeah, yeah,
et cetera, Kid Cream and people like that, well, that was essentially...
Raoul Rincon.
Yeah, you know, that was my influence.
Yep.
Because I was growing up and DJing in the same time.
Right.
So that was the first record that ever completely got over the line. And
right.
I'm just so fortunate and lucky that it actually got signed to a label like Neon,
yeah, yeah,
straight off the bat. I mean, that was completely... That was my passion. Was that putting that my stamp on that style of
yeah,
music
yeah, yeah.
In 2011? It took a year to kind of get it sample clearance, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did everything above board, and it came round, and you know, a few people played it. There was a couple of people doing re-edits and stuff. There was a guy in America called DJ Icy.
Huge breakbeat DJ.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. He made a breakbeat edit of the Olaf Bosowski mix. And there's a video on YouTube of him playing it at Ultra and stuff like that. So it was just another connect.
There you go.
Just trying to build and grow and stuff like that.
Yeah. And what's funny is, you know, like Raoul Rincon and Olaf and all those guys, they're all friends of mine. You know, we all kind of came up at the same time, and I still support their records. And it's just fun when, you know, you all connect on something that, I know it's going to sound really lame, but as spiritual as house music. Because music is really, it's just that extension of who you are as a personality. So I'm really happy that I could, you know, play some of your records, and, you know, it's just a good, it's a bonding experience.
I've got some more for you as well.
Well, there you go. And it's a bonding experience that once you've had it, and this is the thing, once you've had an experience, you can never unhave it. And it's a memory. It's that something that creates an experience moving forward. So
in terms of your successes, release-wise, so Get Busy and Yawn, are they... your favourite records, or are they just happen to do well in the charts and stuff?
Well,
because you can never kind of predict it, can you? Sometimes the most passionate record that you produce doesn't do as well as
the
next one.
And that is actually tends to be the case. Get Busy, funnily enough. So I just moved to London from Paris, and it's going to sound really cliche, but this is actually the truth, I kid you not. I was in Sainsbury's, the local supermarket, walking around, and I'd literally been in London for a week. And I was pushing my trolley around, looking for the bits to buy. And I heard someone singing. And initially, I just thought, oh, it was the radio. And then I thought, no, hang on. They don't have the radio in the supermarket. And I walked around, and I was like, who is this? And I saw this girl with, like, 2-3 kids and a pram. Or not a pram, like a shopping trolley. And it was her. So I walked over to her, and I was like, excuse me, but, you know, is that you singing? And she's like, yeah. I was like, oh, amazing voice. And I said, you know, have you ever done any recording? She said, no, she hasn't. I said, oh, I'm a house music producer. Cliche, but yeah. I said, oh, here's my card. Another cliche. Gave it to her. And I said, listen, if you ever feel like working on anything, let me know. Here's my card. And about a week passed, and she called me up. And she said, oh, you know, I've been thinking about what you said. Yeah, I'm totally up for it. She came around my studio, and we sat down, and we chatted. And the first ever track we did was out on Hot 22's label called Doesn't Matter. And if you check it out... It's a mashup of Linkin Park vocal that she re-sung, and I think it was Marshall Jefferson.
Was this her idea?
No, it was mine. Okay. My idea. She came up with the vocal idea. And that was the first single. The first track we did, signed straight off the bat, Hot 22, remix, killed it. And then I thought, all right, let's do another one. And I'm an old school house head. There was a track from by a group called Quartz from 1992 called Let's Get Busy. It's one of my all-time favorite records. And it has this really cool piano in it. And I thought, I'm going to sample that. So I did. I created it and sampled it and made the track. And I called up Elliot, the singer, and I said, listen, can you come around? She was like, yeah, absolutely. She said, I'm pretty pissed right now. I'm pretty drunk. I'm at a birthday. So do you still want me to come over? I said, yeah, come over. And she came over and she was absolutely hammered. She could barely stand up. Put the headphones on her and I said, just freestyle, just come up with some stuff. And she was like, all right. And then she started singing Get Busy. And I just sat there and I just knew it was like, right, magic just happened. She was absolutely shit-faced. And she had no idea when I sent it to her what she'd done because she didn't even remember being there or singing in the first place.
Good day.
And literally, I sent it to Paul from Soul Avengers and literally within a day, he said, yeah, I want it, signed it. And then they did the remix and then it came out 2007, 2008 and literally just blew up. Those are records that I'm really proud of that have done well. Yawn, I never really liked it in the first place. That was an album record. It wasn't actually supposed to be a single. There was another single that I wanted to put out instead, but the label said, no, we need to go with this one. Luckily, that went to number one. The Beatport went to number one on the UK club chart. It did stupidly well across the world. Still not my favourite record. But what can you do? You know,
just go with it.
Just go with it. I played the David Tort mix
down
a lot.
One, are you?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but then I just did a remake of Express 2 Smoke Machine that I really thought was gonna smash it on Beatport. Nothing. Everyone was playing it, you know. Kreider, Tom Starr, all the big guys were playing it, but it did nothing on Beatport, which is curious. So you never know. The records that all the DJs support, here we go, he brings out the Express 2 vinyl.
The vinyl's
like
right there.
So you never know. The record that you think is going to blow doesn't do anything. And then the records that you just think, yeah, whatever.
Have you noticed the change from like Beatport now because of the streaming services that are offered because of the way that Spotify has blown up?
Definitely.
How do you deal with that? I mean, of course, people still categorise Beatport number ones as being the be-all and end-all. But to the general fan, the music consumer, it's all Spotify now, isn't it?
Yeah, they don't care about Beatport. You know, it's not relevant. I can put it into perspective. So I have a project, another side project called Wolf Crew that I do. And it's a deeper house project that I do. And I've done three singles with it, signed to Sony. And the first single, 1 million plays on Spotify. Bam, just like that. I look at the Kid Massive stuff. For me to get 1 million plays on any single, it takes me like 4 years. I did that in like 2 weeks. It was crazy. And then I looked at the financial stats of a Spotify.
There was none.
See, this is the thing. Spotify pay 51% of income to the label. The label then pays whatever deal that they have with you to you. So if you have a shit deal, you're going to get a shit cut. But I don't have a shit deal. I have a 50-50 split. So I actually made a fair bit of money on that one record. And then I looked at my stats for like my highest grossing track of 2016 on Beatport, you know, which sold, I don't know, a couple of thousand copies on Beatport. I looked at the sales figures and it was literally like, you know, it was pissy compared to Spotify. So, and to be honest, and if your track doesn't break on Beatport, you're not going to make any money on it. It's just not going to work. Mm-hmm. It's simply a promotion tool.
Yeah.
So what I would recommend to all producers out there, find yourself an aggregator, find someone that can get you onto the playlist Spotify playlists, find someone that runs a playlist, approach them, speak to them, say, listen, I've got this release. This is something you're interested in. Get yourself in a playlist. Because once that happens, you know, 1 million plays is $5,500.
Okay.
So, you know, if you've got a 50% split with your label, you know, then, you know, you're making $2,500. So it's financially doable. And you can actually make money off it if you're smart and clever.
That's interesting. I didn't realise that. Well, I guess it would come down to what deal you get with the label in the
That's
first
it,
instance.
In the first place.
Because, I mean, even myself, I've been, there's pitfalls of hidden clauses in contract where they have the first option, the next three or four records that you produce and things like that. So I guess it's trying to lock the first or the best deal that you can at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, as long as you've got that, then you can kind of...
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to make a penny, are you?
No, you're not. And I actually rarely do options for labels because by an option for the people out there that don't know is when the record label says, yes, we'll sign this first record, but then we also want the next two or three records exclusively signed to our label. And that's great if the record label works your record. But if they just sit on it and don't do anything like the majority of labels out there, like booking agents that don't do anything for you, then you've literally locked yourself in for, you know, the next 6 months and they're not going to do anything for you. Whereas I think if you just say, right, let's see how it goes. Let's see what kind of promotion you put into the first single. And if it's not quite right, then you're just going to go,
it's got to be a collaboration, hasn't it?
It has to be. You know, and a lot of labels, I'm really, really big on paying my artists. And what I mean by that is a lot of labels don't pay their artists. So the distribution deal that I have with Contour in Germany is that they handle all paperwork for all artists. I don't. So every 3 months, I get my check through the door. It's for my 50% of the label in earnings. That's it, because that's the standard contract. Contour then take care of... So if you sign to my label, Contour would get all your information, and they would say, right, this is how much you've made in quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four. So then it's above board. You know, 50 euro here, 50 euro there. It's transparent. And you know what? I'd rather make 50 euro and then have the label actually be in contact with me rather than no contact, no promo. Oh, it went up on Spotify, went up on Beatport, and there's a SoundCloud link, and that's it. And you're like, yeah, but I could have done that. But then I could also have promoted it and actually gotten the record to more DJs, and I could have got it on a Spotify playlist, and I could have gotten it on Capital FM, I could have gotten it on Beatport, I could have gotten... You know, there's a lot of things you can do if you have the power. But if you sign it to a label that doesn't do anything, then you've lost your power, and then you're fucked.
And there's certainly a few of them around.
Yeah, I won't go into names or details, but there are certain labels and people out there that I would never personally work with, ever.
I mean, it's difficult in some ways because, I mean, I know from personal experience, if I send a track to, and I don't do this with every record, but you know, sometimes if you just can't get a record signed, you will end up sending it out to 20 labels or something like that. And sometimes you just don't hear back. Mm. So then when you do get that one little slither of hope, which prevents you from putting it up as a free download and going down that route, then, you know, it may be even 3 months or 4 months. I've had a record which I completely forgot about, and I got an email literally 6 months later from Dirty Dutch to release the record with them, but I completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
And it was lucky that I did, because otherwise it would have been a free download long ago.
Mm.
And I understand that the amount of demos they must receive in order to be 6 months behind before they even make a decision and stuff like that. But for the average, let's say there's a 17-year-old kid who's mass producing a load of tracks or whatever he's doing, and then he finally gets an email back from, you know, a perceived big label, but like you just said, they don't do anything. He might just be completely new to it. He might not understand the pitfalls. He might sign it without even looking at the contract and stuff like that. And it does happen. So it's difficult in some ways because people just want to be able to have that label associated with them, with their bio, with their brand, you know, what they're pushing. But it is completely true, and I've seen it, and I know what you're talking about. It's if it's the wrong deal, but just the right label, you know, people just sign.
And that's the thing, and, you know, I know people out there that have signed, that have also signed their artist names to the label. And I remember there was this young guy that I because I'm quite vigilant. I listen to everything that comes through. And if someone sends me a demo 2-3 times in a row, and I'm like, okay, this is definitely someone to watch. And there's been a couple of occasions where I've spotted a few artists that I knew were going to blow up, and they have gone on and done really big things. And there was this one guy in particular, I won't say who it was, who sent me some stuff, and it was, I'll tell you after the show. amazing music, really, really good. And I remember contacting him. I said, oh, you know, I really like your stuff. Would you be up for doing a track together? And at this point, he was nobody. You know, he signed a few labels, but nothing big. And then I remember... he got back to me and said, oh, I'd love to, but I can't. I'm like, oh, why not? And he said, well, because I've signed on to this label exclusively, and they also own my name. So I can't put out any other music under this name because they basically own it. And I'm like, that sounds like a really bad deal. And he said, yeah. He wasn't actually aware of it until afterwards.
Yeah, that's always the way.
And I said, did you read the contract? And he said, no. Case in point, read. That's it. They just get excited and sign. All you have to do is literally just read it. It's you know, some of it's pretty business jargon, but most of it you can kind of get an idea of what's going on.
I mean, you can see a flag in a contract. If it's a red flag, somebody else, get somebody else to read it.
Exactly.
Somebody who's impartial and they're not kind of got the blinders on that you have.
Because people, this is business. Treat it like a business. If you approach this like an amateur, you will be an amateur for the rest of your life. Treat it like a business. Make money like it's a business. Treat your product like a business. You know, you don't see Coca-Cola giving away free stuff.
Shout out to Coca-Cola. We are in the W Sound Suite in Bali.
Exactly.
Ding, 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 ding.
Exactly. Coca-Cola are a business. They sell their product. They know how to sell it. They are a business.
Speaking of Coca-Cola, you've done some work for Pepsi.
No, where'd you get that from?
Well.
Oh, no, hang on. No, I haven't done anything for Pepsi myself. What happened was, and I don't know if this is the story you got. So I produced a track that, what's her name? Afrojack's wife, what's she called? Ava Simmons.
Yeah, yeah.
That she loved. So she took it as hers. And she used it as a single. She used the top line that we'd done for it as well. God, I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, it's irrelevant, the name of it. And then all of a sudden we got an email from Pepsi saying, oh, by the way, we want to use it in Holland as the campaign for the Beyonce tour that Ava was doing the support act for. For some legal reasons, they couldn't use Beyonce in Holland. So they had to use Ava. And then that's the connection between the track that I produced and top line that I wrote with Ava Simmons and Pepsi. So technically, it's not me.
Did you still receive checks, or did you receive a check?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, they paid really well.
That's all worth it then, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. But, you know, it's if they pay me well, and, you know, if I can feel if it's a decent brand alignment, I won't do cigarettes because I don't smoke and I don't believe in smoking.
Well, Asia, my friend, will do cigarettes and they'll try and snap you up pretty quick. Indonesia.
Yeah, because I don't smoke. So for me, it's not. It has to be brand alignment. I can't do that. So, but yeah.
Okay, so we're going to get you out of here shortly because we've gone into some pretty deep stuff here.
Yeah, a bit of all sorts. It's the thing is, music and life is about everything. You've got ups and downs. You have to open up to everything because once you open up to the downs, that's what makes the ups good. You know, and that's what makes getting out of a hole much easier is to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. But it's simply an analogy that I use is like you're boiling a pot of water and you've got the lid on it. The boiling hot water is that something that you've never dealt with. At some point, it's going to boil over and it's going to make a mess. And it's going to get really hot and the lid's going to come off and it's just going to get ugly. Don't make that happen. And that's why, you know, I'm very candid about the shit that I've gone through. Just, you know, share it.
It's all love.
It is. That's exactly it, mate. It's all love.
All right, then. So lastly, what can we expect from you out of the studio in the next couple of months?
You've got
20 on your hard drive, so what's going on with you?
What have I got? So there's a big push for me on my label, Get Down. So I am focusing on releasing probably 80% of my label because I've got a good distribution network. I've got a really good promo connection network with that. And I want to build the brand because Get Down is also a platform for upcoming artists. It's not just me. So that's why, you know, I've got people like Schiavo and Vindes. I've got Sevag from New York. You know, there's so many upcoming talents, producers that I want to support and help spread their music. And by me releasing on my own label, it just adds that tiny bit of credibility to the label and it boosts them as well.
Sure.
So I've got, Smoke Machine Remixes Part 2 just came out last Friday. Absolutely smashing it, by the way. The Gothenburg Beats remix and the Vido Jean and Oliver Lowen remix.
There you go, Trainspotters.
Absolutely sick. Tribal Latin House, just the way I love it. And then after that, I've got... So, bit of a funny story. Back in 2012, did a bootleg of Bob Sinclair Feel For You. And everyone was playing it. I even got license requests for it, Radio 1, blah, blah, blah. But it was a bootleg because I couldn't do anything with it. So I had the sample replayed and I had the vocal redone by Alexandra Prince. And she nailed the vocal, by the way. And then put them together, approached my publisher and I said, I've done this, can you clear it? And they said, yeah, we can clear the vocal. Yeah, we can clear the sample, but we can't clear it together. I'm like, why not? And said, I don't know, we just can't do that. And I was like, oh, fuck, okay. So then I signed the vocal version to Flamingo, Kid Massive Feel For You. And I was sitting on the sample for like 2 years, 3 years. And I thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm just gonna put it out on my own label. So it's coming out on the 12th of May called Disco Machine. And it's a replayed Feel For You disco sample.
Is the previews up at the moment?
No, they will be probably, I'll play it tomorrow. Tomorrow, is it tonight?
What day is it today? Yeah, but on Friday, it's tonight.
Tonight, I'll play it tonight.
There you go.
Oh, but the previews will come up next week. And so I've got that coming up. I've got done a track called Old School, big piano thing coming out on Hoxton's Horse label. What else have I got coming up? I've got an EP coming out on my own label.
To be busy.
I cannot remember. I've got so much, and then I've got the Wolf Crew stuff as well on the side. I've got two singles coming out there. I've got one on.
You've got Yachts to be on and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's a tough life, isn't it?
Luckily, I've got a red book where I write everything down, so I don't have to remember it.
So if people want to contact you on your social media, what are you most active on? What do you kind of prefer? Do you prefer Instagram, Twitter, Facebook? And how can people get in touch? And give you a follow, of course.
Yeah, info@kidmassive.com. Email, hit me up on all my socials. I'm across all of them.
Are they all at Kid Massive?
Yeah, yeah. They're all the same address. And I'm across all of them. Same with my label. I'm across all of them. And, you know, again, if you've got demos, send it. You know, introduce yourself, because I make it, and anyone that's ever sent me a demo can attest to this, that if you send me a demo, I will reply, period. And I will probably reply within a week, whether I like it or not, because I feel it's my duty that if you've sent me a record, that I'm going to take at least 2 minutes to listen to the bloody thing and give you a reply. So that is a note for all you aspiring label owners out there. Treat your artist the way that you want to be treated yourself, with respect. That's how you grow your family. That's how you grow your database. And that's how you grow your brand.
Some wise words.
There you go. Really, I'm wise. I'm old, mate.
This could be the most wisest podcast I've done. See what I did there?
I know.
Made a word up and everything.
There you go. Wisest. I like it.
Yeah, wisest. That'll do. Okay, well, thanks so much for doing this. You can go and get another Balinese massage now if you want.
I will. I'm hopping up to the pool now.
By the time this goes out, it might take a few hours to edit it. The gig may have already passed tonight in Bali. But having said that, it might be out in time before your Vietnam gig. So hopefully Perfect. Those listening from Vietnam can go and... Where are you playing in Vietnam again? Just give them a quick
Hanoi
shout out.
Hanoi at Camila Lounge and Upper in Ho Chi Minh.
And that's Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday and then the following Saturday.
Okay, so a little bit of a stopover in Vietnam.
Yeah, Moi Nhi as well by the coast.
Very nice.
I don't even know where that is.
All right, well, thank you very much. And I'll see you tonight, my
Cheers,
friend.
Mate. Looking forward to it.
Catch you in a bit.
Yep.
So there you have it, folks. That was Act Like a DJ with this week's guest, Kid Massive. Special thanks for Kid Massive for popping by. He's now flew over to Vietnam. He'll be there for a week or so. He's got a couple of gigs, so be sure to check him out if you're in the area. I'll see you on the next episode.